What's tumah? Is tumah something that man can understand? Tumah, tahara. What is tar? What is tameh? It's something beyond the grasp of man. Do we even understand it? At night, there's a big machloikis. Machloikis, I get it. I get the shaila asked at least 10, maybe a dozen times a year. Somebody left a package underneath their bed, some package of food, and now in the morning they want to eat it. We know that underneath the bed is a ruach hatumah. So is a person allowed to eat the food that was left underneath in the morning? It's an old question. But the whole idea of tumah is difficult for us to understand. Even the idea when we wash our hands, a person sleeps in the day 30 minutes, so when they get up, they wash their hands. That's hard for us to understand. How did the tumah come? Where did it come from? How did it get onto a person? More than that, in Bells they have the minig, that what happens, not only the person sleeping, what happens if you go to wake up the person, and you give him a little nudge and he should wake up. So in Bells the minig, that even the person that gave the nudge became tumah, he's also got to wash. Where's all of that come from? The idea that there can be tumah, that there can be uncleanliness. Certainly it's something min hashamayim that is al pi kabbalah, the way that a tumah comes into this world, the person way becomes tumah. What happens, the Avnei Nezer explains the whole thing. When a person gets a haircut, they wash their hands afterwards, and the Avnei Nezer goes into the whole explanation of what it means to grow hair, and what was the whole inyan by a nozer and so forth. But these things are a little bit beyond us. Isn't it peculiar that the way that we remove the tumah is by washing the tilas yadayim dafka b'koyach gavra? If it was automated, it wouldn't be good enough. If it was something that came mechanically, a robot came and washed the hands, it would not be good. It has to be a koyach gavra to remove the tumah. If it wasn't koyach gavra, the psak halacha of the man did not wash himself, so then he's got to wash a second time, the water didn't do it. You take a look at this, it's min hashamayim, the tumah. How is it going to help that an individual, that a person, goes and washes their hand? It's a koyach gavra. What is he adding or taking away from the tumah itself? With that, I'd like to begin the first pasuk. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe al Aaron lemor, when you're going to speak, yedavar aleichem paro lemor, tenu lachem moifes. Paro is going to say, give to you a moifes, right? Paro said that. Vayomer al Aaron, so go at that point and say to Aaron, kachas matzah, take the matzah, v'ishlich lifnei paroi, and send it in front of paroi, throw it down in front of paroi. Okay, everybody knows, so even Moshe v'Aaron al paroi, v'yaskein kasher tzivu Hashem, they did exactly as Hashem Yisbarach said that it should be done. Whenever there's a nes, by the way, we always have a command to do it exactly as Hashem said it should be done, without making the slightest shinoi. Anyone that makes the slightest shinoi, it doesn't work the same way. When a person has an instruction that something should come true, and they do it in a little bit of a different way, it doesn't work. Example, they came one time, what's a skula? Skulas, that people, you know, what people do today for skulas. What happened? There was a person that was, Lelena was very ill. So he came to the altar of Slobodka. The altar of Slobodka, one of the greatest tzaddikim, the head of the Slobodka yeshiva. So he came to the altar of Slobodka and he said to the altar, what should I do? The altar of Slobodka said, I tell you what to do. Go to the yeshiva, hire two yeshiva bachrim, take out two yeshiva bachrim, and pay them to say Yehei Shmei Rabba. That's what the altar of Slobodka said. That's all. Pay them, when they say Yehei Shmei Rabba, they should have you in mind for a schus. The fellow was waiting to hear some mystical interpretation, so he didn't do it. Altav Slobodka cried that he didn't do it, because that was what he... So when he tried something else, the Altav Slobodka said that Chazal tell us that a person says Yehesh Mei Rabba B'kol Koychoi, it's already Koyin Loi Gezardinoi, it takes away his Gezardin, he doesn't understand, so the man got yet sicker, Lo Aleinu. Finally, he listened to the Altav Slobodka, he went out, he paid two bochim, he said, when you say Yehesh Mei Rabba, have me in mind, they said Yehesh Mei Rabba, and within not too long of a period of time, he got better. There's something that has to be done according to what Ribbono Shel Olam put in this world that we should do without a shinoi. If we make the slightest shinoi in any of the things that any of the brachos that it says in Chazal or any of those skulos, so we're not promised that what we would like to receive, we're going to get, because it has to be exactly in that. The fact that Moshe and Aaron keeps saying Kasher Tziva Hashem, Moshe, Kasher Tziva Hashem is Moshe, keeps repeating that over and over again, because it means that when we receive an instruction, we should do it exactly. Most people will say, you know, it's a school if you say the whole Tehillim in one day. It's a big school, they say the whole Tehillim in one day. It's very difficult, it takes 2, 3, if a person's not used to it, it takes 4 hours to say the whole Tehillim. So somebody said, listen, the whole Tehillim in one day is hard. How about if I pass it around and I say the one sefer, another prayer? It's also good. That's also saying the whole Tehillim. Is it the same school as the whole Tehillim in one day? That's a question. Whether if a person, one person said, it's a tremendous school for tshuva. But these things have to be done as it is said in Chazal. Any of the things that a person wants a bracha for, it has to be exact without having any changes, without any, even any little variations. So that's why he keeps saying Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, to show that Moshe and Aaron did not put anything in of their own. They did exactly whatever was supposed to be done. However, there's a question. Why was the matzah given over? Ask anybody. What was the reason the matzah was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Aaron? It was to show Paroi that there is a Hashem in the world. Here's a nace. What happened with the matzah? If you remember, the matzah came along, and all of a sudden, the Chartumim, the magicians of Mitzrayim, they also made serpents. They made little nechoshim, and there the Matah Elokim, the Matah of Moshe and Aaron, went and ate up all of the other matas. It ate up all of the other little snakes, the nechoshim. So the question is, it's interesting because we learn in the parasha itself that the reason that the Matah was sent was in order that Moshe Rabbeinu should show Paroi, here, this is Simon HaShemayim, it's a sign from heaven. You've got to send out Bnei Yisrael, you've got to let them go. You have to let the Geula happen. On the other hand, what happened? We realize that Hashem hardened. Akshev Hashem, how many times it says, Vayichazik Hashem Eslei Paroi, Vayichazik Hashem Eslei Paroi, every other pasuk, that Hashem continued to be Mechazik, the heart of Paroi, that he should dafka not allow Bnei Yisrael to go out. So if that was the reason, really, what Hashem wanted, that Paro should keep refusing so that all of the Nisim happened, all the Makos happened, that Mitzrayim was paid back, neither connected, neither they got punished for everything they did. If that was really what was at the bottom of the whole thing, so it's a good question. Why did Hashem send the Matah in the beginning? Hashem shouldn't have sent the Matah. Why? Because the Matah was going to induce Paro to let Bnei Yisrael go out. When Hashem did not want to let Paro send them out, Hashem wanted that Moshe Rabbeinu should continue to do all the Nisim, continue to do all the Makos, continue to do everything that was going on, in order that Mitzrayim should have to live through all the things that they put Bnei Yisrael through. Each thing was a Midah Keneged Midah. Dom Tzvardei, you can follow it all along. Each thing was done for something that Mitzrayim did, that the Mitzrayim did to Bnei Yisrael. So the question now, why was the matzah sent in the beginning? What was the reason for the matzah? Now, generally, before we begin to answer the kasha, we have to know that a lot of times there is a simen that means something, and then sometimes it could be that there is a simen that does not mean anything. Okay, it depends whether the simen means something or not. An example, the Rabbeinu Yehuda Chosson says, if you're leaving your house, you're going on vacation, and everybody knows when you're leaving the house, you always forget something. You turn the motor on, you're almost ready to go. Oh, I forgot my whatever it is. Ben Yehuda Chassid says, don't go back. Whatever you forgot, don't go back. If it's a Devar Mitzvah, you forgot your tefillin, or you forgot Shabbos lit, or you forgot something else, then you're allowed to go back. If you didn't forget a Devar Mitzvah, then you shouldn't go back. That's what the Ben Yehuda Chassid said. People are choshish for it. Depends whether a person could go back, whether it's a tzoyach for the nesiyah or food or whatever. There's all kinds of inyanim. So the question is, why not go back? If the reason we don't go back is because there's some kind of a thing that if a person does go back, that it's a not good simon, we want to have good simon when we go on the way, or is there something deeper behind it? On the other hand, I saw it brought down in the name of the Balatanya that it's an inyan to go back to a place a second time. Say, for instance, you went to visit somewhere. It is a big inyan in life to revisit the same place a second time. And the Balatanya would go out of his way to visit a place that he had already gone to, he would go into that place a second time for a unknown reason, a tam kamus we don't understand. So therefore we see that the simen can be a good simen and it can be no simen at all. Another thing, you're going to go somewhere, right? You're ready to go to make a clinch a business deal. You wait on the bus, you get a call, they say that there's no buses, the transit went on strike. Then you say, okay, I'll call a taxi, you call a car service, they take you, all of a sudden in the middle of the trip, what happens? The car service breaks down. Then you get out of the car service, you figure you walk the rest of the way. While you're walking, you trip and you fall, don't get hurt, but then you start to think, maybe there's a simen shamayim here, that I should be going on my way. A lot of times it's it. Is that the proper time to have a simen, or is it not? Is it perhaps that the sultan is saying, no, I want to make it difficult for this person because parnasa comes about through different nisyonos, so I want to make it difficult, and you say, instead of worrying about all the obstacles that you had on your way, don't worry. Go ahead, ignore the simonim, and run, and do what you should. And then how many times do we say, when something happened, let's say something small happened, and you say, oh, I knew there was a simon earlier today, why I shouldn't have done this. There's no question that there was a simon that I shouldn't have gotten involved. In order to know which are the simonim that are to be listened to, which are the simonim that are not to be listened to, a person has to have Ruach HaKodesh. It's not a simple rule of thumb to follow. When should we listen to this simon? When should we not listen to this simon? The only thing that we can judge is if it's Al Pi Torah. If something is according to Hashkafas HaTorah, then we should follow it, even if we would have simonim the other way around. However, there are certain things that we follow a simon for. For instance, in marriage, there are certain simonim that happen along the way, say going out, where a person will have certain simonim, and they should either, it means that they should continue, or that they should stop. There are simonim like that. There are simonim that help a person to know when to proceed in certain areas, and when to, not to proceed, but rather to hold back, and to try and to go in a different way. So there are simonim that sometimes there are inyanim that mean something. Now these simonim are sometimes beyond us. In order to be able to tell, it's very difficult. Someone came to Rav Shach one time, and he said that he had a simon while they were going out, had a simon, and the simon was, he felt it wasn't a good simon. What was the simon? The woman came late to the, whenever they were supposed to go out, the woman came late. Anybody that knows halacha knows that that's the teva. Sometimes a woman comes late. Maybe she's supposed to come late. I don't know. But that's the way it is. So he came to Rav Shach, and he felt that this, that she's coming late, he's a sensitive person, says, the reason she comes late is because she's not machshav my time. She's not interested to see me that much, so therefore she slows it up, and he wants to break off the shidduch. So Shach said, let me ask you a question. How far along is it? What was the last thing that you discussed when you went out? That was the question he asked. What was the last topic of conversation? So he said the last conversation that we had was where we should live. Where we would live, like in which city, in which place. Rav Shach said, if you went that far, it's a simon already, you should get married. Now it's interesting. He had a simon the other way around. They did get married. Once Rav Shach said get married, they weren't going to go any other way. So they went, they got married and everything, Baruch Hashem, worked out. They went to the right place, she came more on time. And so, but the inyan that a person should know that sometimes we take a look at a simon and it could be the opposite way around. The reason isn't because the Yetzirah, the Satan, places in front of us also obstacles, ikuvim, all types of roadblocks that we shouldn't get there. Where do we see a raya from this? Avraham Avinu went on the way to Yakeda. What did the Satan do? Made a mountain in front of him, made a big long ocean, and for Avraham Avinu to go in, it was tremendous. So you take a look at these simonim and you can think, this may not be the ruts of the Bayrek. It depends whether it is something that's it's min hashamayim or something that's not min hashamayim. Something that comes from Torah, that we're doing a mitzvah, even as difficult as it is, as many obstacles that happen, that person should never look at it as a simon for bad. On the other hand, sometimes if a person is involved in something and it may not be 100% good, they should abort it right away if they feel that there's a slightest shaila. I'll give you an example. It's not a psak halacha at all, and it's 100% mutter according to many of the poskim. A person's on Shabbos, and they want to have their business open. There are certain businesses that the main day used to be on Shabbos. One of the main day dry goods, different types of clothing, the main day used to be the main day of sale was Shabbos. So you have a problem. You have a yid that's in business. He wants to stay open on Shabbos, because if he doesn't stay open on Shabbos, he's losing more than 1/7. He could be losing half of what his weekly hachnasa is. So how's it able to be done? Everybody knows. You find the goy, you bring the goy in, you make a shtar shutvis between the goy and the yid. It's a complicated process, not so simple. The goy is allowed to stay open on the store on Shabbos. He has a shtar, and in the shtar he is entitled to a percentage of the profits that come in, and he is running the store. It's considered as though if he owns it on Shabbos. It's a complicated shtar. It has to be filled up. Kinyonim have to be made. Every calculations of how much money comes in. It's not as simple. It's not like just a trick where you get a goy and say, okay, it's yours on Shabbos, I give you $10, have a good day. It has to be a serious worked out with the percentages, all of the money. Okay, that's what happens. Now it says that it says in Shuvos HaHagos from the great Rav Sternbuch in Eretz Yisrael, he said he would never be matarit. Never be matarit. Igros Moshe has the formula how to do it. Rav Sternbuch says he never be matarit. What's the reason? He says there are many bad simonim that happened, people that were open on Shabbos. And because of that reason, he was only matarit in two cases. When was he matarit? If somebody did tshuva, right? A person that made tshuva later in life, and he was open on Shabbos. So to tell the guy, close down, and you'll be from now, you can't tell him right away, close your business. Maybe that's a zikr day. So mivnei takon ashovim, allow him to take in a goy. It's interesting, I had one time a yid, I can even say his name, I'm sure he wouldn't care, Ferguson. He's a ger tzedek, he's a very from person. He has a brother, naturally. He's a complete goy. So on Shabbos, the brother owned it, and during the week, the other brother owned it. It was an interesting thing, because he always had a shayla. Could his brother be, the brother has no shaychus to him. The brother, once he's megayer, the brother becomes like any Joe on the street. He's no longer his own brother. It's only a shaylin kibbut of aim. Something happens, chas v'shalom, so then what to do? But it's, for all intents and purposes, there's not a familial relationship anymore. Okay, that was Agav Orcha, but we'll get back to the case. So anyhow, in such a case, Rav Sternbuch is matur, that if a person already did it, or there's particular difficulties, there's shverkeiten, you can allow the goy to be the partner. But he wasn't matur, because he brought down several incidents that happened in the past. There was a yid that asked me, lives in the west. He's a frum yid, very fine person, and his business went public. He went into the stock market, and the business started booming. When business started booming, he had a nisoya now. Others came in, stockholders, shareholders came in, it became a big corporation now, and now there was a shaila, because they opened up many different stores. Shaila is, it has to be open on Shabbos. Any of these types of stores are all open on Shabbos. What did he do? Made a shtar, took in a goy, the goyim that were there, made the everything proper, and the goyim were to get their share on Shabbos. Night of the Ayim, it lasted about a year. After that year, for some unknown reason, the stock started going down. The people that came into the company took him over. The one that was the Yiddisha owner, they took him over, they outvoted him, and they voted him that he's out. It was unbelievable. He had to hire a team of lawyers in order to fight being displaced from his own company, his own Baisa. He came to me, and he says that he seems to be that he has a Siman Min HaShamayim. Up until the time when he was open Shabbos, everything was going great. He was going up and up. He gave stokas and everything. Now that he started to be open on Shabbos, he definitely feels that this is the problem why his fortune went down. He decided he'll close up on Shabbos now and see what will happen. They're fighting now to get just the ownership of him back. That's the question. When a person loses something, it's more difficult to get it than it is in the first place. Once a person has something, they should be very careful with it, because it's more difficult once they lose it to get it back, than even to get it in the first place. To get something in the first place is a tremendous nesinim and a shamayim. When a person loses it or gives it away for some reason, and then they have to bring it back down, that's not so pashut, that's not so simple anymore. So Bez Hashem, he should get it back, but it's an interesting thing, just what happens, a person has to listen. Ha'pi alocha, that would be a simon. If business starts to go down for a certain thing like that, then he should definitely give it up. He should definitely give up the being open on Shabbos, and perhaps he would get it back. There are other simonim that a person could have that may mean that things are good. After all, there was the simon in the Beis Hamikdash. There were many simonim, things that happened when things stopped happening. So then it would be a question whether the year ahead would be good or not. Tkiyas Shofar, it's a simon that things are going to be good. What does it say? Kol Shana, any year, it says in Gemara Hashana, where they're not Masriya in the beginning, B'tchilasa Masriya B'saifa, so in the end, they will have to blow the Trua. What does that mean? That there will be some Chas HaShalom, some bad things that will happen. So everybody began to trace back what happened in the beginning of the year of 9/11. Was it a year that they were Masriya in the beginning or not? If you take a look in the Mefarshim, it says that's only in a possibility where, and it's in the Mukhe Yosef, that says that's only where they had the possibility to blow the shofar, and they didn't. In a year when it was a Shabbos, was the first day of Rosh Hashanah, so they don't have to worry, because that was something that was min hashamayim. So that's not a siman. But on the other hand, everybody tries to take out simonim. Another siman we have, Rosh Hashanah, by night. Everybody eats all the simonim milsa, honey, and the rimoin, and the cabbage, and everything that we eat, it's all a big simon. And people are very, very, very medaktik that they should have all of the simonim, and there's about 10 or even more that we're medaktik to have. It seems as though that the Shalom HaKadosh says this is very important. Doesn't matter if I take a simon, shenifrev and nirveh, whatever, or I take it to Teshonah Tomah Sukkah, just like this honey. It seems to me the Shalom HaKadosh says that that's an important simon. If you do those simonim and you mispalo, not the fact that you just eat the honey and not the fact that you have just the little bit of a vegetable, but the fact of the whole reason that the simon is there to make us be mispalo even more. And when we're mispalo more, we get that whatever the simon is supposed to be around us on, supposed to hint at, that comes into our life more. It's not just the simple idea of eating the simonim. It's the tefillah over the simonim, which is the bracha. So we do see that in Klal Yisrael, simonim sometimes matter very, very much. On the other hand, simonim may at certain times not matter at all. Here in the case of Paroi, it mattered very much. Paroi was given over the matah, and the matah was something that was min hashamayim. It was meant to be mechazek, not only Klal Yisrael, but the matah was meant to say, Paroi, listen, this is a matah, you better listen, you better let the Bnei Yisrael go. On the other hand, our question was in the very beginning, how could it be a simon that Hashem wanted that Paroi let them go? It was exactly the opposite. Vayechazek eslev Paroi. That Hashem continued to harden the heart of Paroi. He shouldn't let Bnei Yisrael out. He should be stubborn, suffer through all of the makas, and go through everything that he needed to go through. That was what was supposed to be. So it's interesting. The Mefarshim say, Rafir says an interesting answer, that it was really the matah that was mechazik, the leiv Paroi. Paroi, when he saw the matah come out, he knew what was going to happen at the end. What was it in the very beginning? In the very beginning, the one matah, the one nachash from Moshe and Aaron, it went and ate up all of the other nachashim that came from the different chartumim, when the magicians came with their own snakes, so the matah elukim ate them all up. What was that? A siman? In the future, Klal Yisrael is going to eat up all of its pursuers, meaning that in the future there will be a geula, Mitzrayim is going to go down the drain, and Klal Yisrael is going to be kaivish the whole land. There wasn't a question about it. So therefore, why was it mechazik v'lei Paroi? When Paroi saw that matah come out, the dummy, what did he do? He thought, uh-oh, here's the siman that matah's coming out again. Klal Yisrael is going to take over the Mitzrayim. I can't let that happen. I can't stop it. I have to continue to make them avodim, because if I don't, they'll rise up against me. By rising up against me, there's a possibility that they're going to win over me. And it was because of that that the matah that Paroi came and saw every time it was brought out again at the beginning. You'll take a look at the beginning of every one of the Nisim, every one of the Makos, the matah came out again. Why? Because it was to show to Paroi exactly the following, that this is going to be what's going to happen to you at the end. When Paroi saw that, instead of thinking to himself he could do tshuva and he could turn around, he took the siman to mean what? Took the siman to mean that Bnei Yisrael are going to overrun him. How could he lose the Malchus? So therefore, double up and fight against him. This is an interesting limud that we learn out from how a person can take the wrong siman. Why? It was a hint way from the beginning. What did Paroi say to Moshe and Aaron? Tenu lochem maifis. Give for yourself a maifis. What was Paroi saying? No matter what simonim I'm going to see in the world, I am not going to take them. When I see a sign, I'm not going to learn out from it. Even I see certain simonim, I'm not going to take a Musar Haskel from it. I won't take a lesson from it. I'll ignore it. And therefore, tenu lochem maifis. If you need a maifis, have it for yourself. What happened? First, has to be very careful what they say with their words. Tenu lochem maifis meant that now Moshe and Aaron were going to have a real maifis for themselves, and that was going to be something that was used against Paroi. If Paroi wouldn't have been such a big shot in the beginning, and he would have said, Tenu li maifis, I would like to see a maifis, then perhaps it would have worked on Paroi. Maybe he would have been open to it, his mind would have been open, and he would have said, you know what, it's correct. I see it. I see that there's something there, and therefore he could have even changed. It was his ignoring of the simonim that caused him to go completely down under. At any stage of the game, he could have caught himself, especially in the beginning makas, but he chose to ignore the simonim. I would like to this evening take a few questions, either on this inyan or any other inyan, halacha, hashkafa. We start just the last few minutes of every shir. But I have to say over a unbelievable story from Rabbi Victor Miller. Rabbi Victor Miller, Zechet Tzadik Livracha, is one of my favorites as about simonim in the world. He says there is a man, I often think about it, there is a man who likes to be very quiet. He can't take noise, right? So he soundproofs his house, a special, I don't know how you call it, how you call that? Insulation. And soundproof the room, you don't hear anything from the outside. He wants to make sure when he sleeps, he's very makbid, that there's no noise that comes in. So he double soundproofs his room. Double soundproofs the room. When he's ready to go to sleep, in order to make sure that nobody disturbs him, he puts on the earphones over his head, and he's dead to the world. He goes to sleep. Ramila says, a little problem happens. A little fire breaks out in the living room. A little fire. So the neighbor comes and gently knocks on the door. And he's got a fire. He's sleeping. He's up with the soundproofing and with the earphones over his head. He doesn't hear anything. Then they start pounding on the door. Doesn't hear anything. They call the fire department. Fire department comes. Fire department starts knocking on the door. They see the fire begins to spread. And they go and they break down the door. And they go inside the house and they start looking all around. Finally, they get upstairs. The fire is raging by this time. They get upstairs and they heard that somebody is in the room. They start knocking the door down. They knock the bedroom door down. And he's there, still sleeping through the whole thing. Slept through the doorbell, the knocking, the breaking of the door, the fire raging, all the other things that happen. The firemen come and start yelling. He doesn't hear the firemen. So what do? They try to wake him up. You know, some people when they're sleeping, forget about it. They take his arm. And they pull his arm. They pull it so hard, it dislocates. But by this time, he's up. He woke up. And he saves his life. Says Rav Miller Zechet Tzadik Livracha, these are simonim. The Ribbono Shel Olam sends us a little simon. No, we ignore it. Let it go. It gets more. We still ignore it. It grows more, grows more, grows more. Person has to keep their eyes open and their ears open to the simonim that happen in life. If we catch the simonim in the very beginning, we can catch ourselves. If we let the simonim go, so then things happen as time goes on, more and more. Rapila.
Wouldn't it be possible to say that by Abraham, he was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu what to do. There's no question of what he had to do. therefore anything came his way was the son. We, on the other hand, try to go b'derech Hashem, but we're never sure if we're really even doing that. If we go to Mora Hara, then that's fine.
Excellent. The only problem is Avram was challenged. Why? Two times. First of all, it says, the Torah that Avram sent forth his Vayishlach Avram es Yodai. So the Mepharshim say, what does it mean he sent forth his hands? So the Brisker Rav says the reason is because how did Avram Avinu figure out what was a mitzvah, what was not a mitzvah? The way that he figured it out was, before he would go to eat, we'll say, challah, lechem, so his feet would straighten up, all of a sudden would walk over to the well, one hand would reach in by themselves, the Yevorim, pick up a cup, wash the other, and after that happened a few times when he was ready to eat bread, he figured out that that was a mitzvah. So therefore, that was the simon. And when it came time to shecht Yitzchak, when it came time for Akedas Yitzchak, so Avraham Avinu wanted to pick up the knife, and his arms didn't go. Why? Because how did he find out what the averis were? The way that he found out, Avraham Avinu's Makayim Kol HaTorah Kula, he found out because if he would go to eat something that was not kosher, so his arms would stay petrified down at the side. So when Avraham was told, go now and pick up the knife to shecht Yitzchak, his arms stayed down. He couldn't lift them. Finally, he says, Avraham had to force himself. And finally, he overcame that, and his arm picked it up. So what happened? Avraham Avinu said, this must be a simon, that all the simonim that I got up until now were incorrect. Because here, Hashem told me directly to shecht Yitzchak, and when I was ready to do it, my arm wouldn't move. So therefore we see that there are other simonim that were given. Somebody tells us something. Where's the Amunas Chachomim? Then when we're doing it, it didn't work out yet. I'm still waiting for the bracha to happen. The person is challenged even if they have a direct siwui from Hashem. Is this correct or is this not? We'll always go back and forth on it. Anybody else? Any inyan whatsoever? It's open. Yeah.
Natan. Sometimes people learn Torah and should not have, and people without understanding. Is there any value to that in their lifetime?
It's interesting. There is such a koyach. It says at the end, after 120 years, anything that a person even read, they will learn. They will know. By some places, they learn Kabbalah. They say, not learn Kabbalah, I'm sorry, they say Kabbalah, say Zohar. Different times. They just say the pages. They don't try to learn it. Anything that a person even said, they will understand in the future all the things that they even said over just with their mouth. So there is a great value to saying the words. Even the person doesn't know it, but they just said the words in itself. Anything that a person tried to learn and didn't understand will also, at the end, will be counted to them as if they learned the Torah. So there is a big thing if a person just reads it straight through. Even they daven the Gemara, they daven the Zohar. It's a big inyan in doing it.
You said about the time you went back a second time. The same day? Or?
No, doesn't have to be the second time. He went to a place that he had once visited. He went there, stepped inside, and then went back. And he said that there's an inyan just to visit a place that a person was previously
only twice,
a second time. Not three times. Said to go back a
first
second time.
He goes to the same bungalow three times.
How about the same shul?
The same shul is also an inyan. It's also an inyan two times. It's a very, very important thing. Some of these things we're not able to understand easily, but sometimes a person... We'll go back. I had an interesting maisa with Rav Simcha Wasserman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that sometimes we would be on the road and he would stop in to see somebody just one more time. And L'chaira, apparently there was no reason to go back a second time, but he would go back a second time and there was no explanation. There wasn't explanation. So this is something that's hard for us to understand, but if we have the ability, we could go back a second time. Sometimes it's worthwhile just to stop in for a minute to have another time in life.
When I was a kid, my parents, Halayim HaShalom, used to tell me, Megeit Nishtzirik, but they had no reason. Then later I learned that when you go out of your house, you're kissing the mezuzah, even though some people today don't even kiss the mezuzah. I did a survey, a lot of them don't kiss. He said, Hashem Shomli, Hashem Shila Liyadimini, Hashem Yishmol, Hashem Shiva Yimah Tovalam. There are malachim waiting there to go with you. Once you go back and go out, these malachim are not there anymore. That's why it's over to each
other. Special. There you have it, Tom.
There are many people who returned, sister mine, she had tzaras that whole day. The veil of tzaras.
That's your return.
Agnes Nefesh.
Yeah, but if you go back a different way, is there any...
In the, you go in the side door.
Can you go back? You forgot something. Can you go back to the
It's already. Is there many yudachos? He doesn't say that. He doesn't say if you go in a second door. But if there are, if there's like a tzairich to go back, then you could go back. But there's also an inyan if you could send somebody else back, that may be better, as opposed to the person themselves going. Anyone else on any inyan?
I was in the airport last Wednesday night to go to St. Louis. I was on a plane ready to go, but they couldn't go. They closed the airports, and they couldn't go. Everything was frozen. So they told us to go home. I went back there Thursday night. We were on a plane ready to go at 7 o'clock. Oh, they made an announcement to the captain. He says the fusion pump has a leak. It's going to take 10 minutes to fix. Then a half an hour. Then finally we need a new part. I didn't wait. I went home. It was a remiss. I figured it's not for me to fly.
Good. Oh, Hashem. So you didn't end up going, huh?
No.
It's our school, so you're here.
The
oh, Hashem.
I got my money back and extra $400 of vouchers.
Shkoyach, a good Shabbos.